everyone. This is Ryan Hoover with Product Hunt Radio. I'm here with Matt Galligan and Ryan Block at, what do you call this, the Engadget headquarters? Or it's a headquarters for many different startups, it seems like.
This is 410 Townsend. This is the fourth floor office. We have two offices in this building. The first floor is mainly TechCrunch. The fourth floor is a bunch of different teams. So I've heard it called the Engadget space, the Crunchbase space. I don't know.
Nice. I heard somebody say AOL Brands.
Yeah, that works too. Brands is like a division of AOL, so yeah.
And you have beef jerky, which I noticed. I wanted to steal some, but
why didn't you take some beef jerky?
I should have. I don't know. I'm just trying to curb the beef jerky. There's a lot of sodium in that.
And he did offer beer too, so I mean,
That's true.
We should have done
that. Everybody wants to stop by for some beer and jerky.
Yeah, it is a real podcast when you start bringing out the beer, so maybe we should.
Yeah,
but. Do you guys want to introduce yourself for those that aren't familiar already?
Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, I'm Matt Galligan. I'm the co-founder and CEO of a new startup called Circa. And I guess serial entrepreneur or whatever, started a couple companies, but this is the one that I'm on right now.
Cool. My name is Ryan Block. A long time ago, I did a site called Engadget. Followed that up with another site called Gadget. Been doing startup stuff for quite a while. Last one was acquired by AOL. Actually, the first one was also acquired by AOL. So,
you're gonna get a hat trick here?
Yeah, I'm doing like I think two's enough. Now VP product at AOL. I work on a team that has not yet been announced. So that'll be announced soon.
Cool. You said top secret earlier, so
it's not. I mean, it's not that secret.
Well, it's a little more interesting when you say top secret. So
yes,
just
run it is it. Totally top secret. If you tell anyone, I will kill you.
Yes, I know. So today was the big Apple announcement. It's in the afternoon now, and I attempted to watch the video stream along with everyone else this morning, and it was unfortunately failing during the first half. But I have been busy at Disrupt today, so I'm actually a little bit out of the loop on the details. They announced Apple Pay, of course, the new iPhone 6 and 6 Plus, so not 6S, they're going with Plus this time, and the watch. Which I was surprised they called it the watch, actually.
It's almost the Apple Watch.
Yeah,
that's true.
The watch.
By the way, just
cool.
As an aside,
yeah, that's true.
Can we talk for just like a brief moment about how TechCrunch totally snowed you by like having you at or like right after all the Apple stuff? Like,
hey, it wasn't.
That's
too
kind
bad.
Of a dick move.
No, I don't think Susan was planning to. Yeah, I was right after the announcement, so thankfully I was not during it. I was watching some of the stream actually. I don't remember who was on it at the time.
Oh, that'd have been brutal.
But unfortunately, you know, everyone in the audience at the time is on, you know, Apple.com watching the live stream. They're not going to be watching Disrupt that time. So,
well, those that could successfully watch the live stream.
That's true.
Oh, that was brutal.
Yeah.
Well, all three of those things you mentioned, the watch, the 6, and Apple Pay, are the top products on Product Hunt today.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. We saw it coming. It looks like we're getting close to 300 upvotes on the watch. The watch is, you know, the most popular and also the biggest change, I guess.
Where do you want to start?
Yeah. Well, it's the first new product in 5 years. First new product line.
Yeah.
And that's huge. Last one was the iPad, right? And we all know how that transformed Apple. And, you know, just, I guess, do we start on watch?
Sure. I think it's certainly the most anticipated. I mean, it's not like anybody was under the illusion that there were, you know, phones coming there. Not under the illusion that there were phones coming to me. Of course there were phones
but
coming
this was
today. And we knew what they looked like. I mean, you know, people have seen them and Gruber guessed the resolution. So it's like the phones are cool, but like, you know, the watch is the story.
Well, the phone is cool. I'm going to get it, but it's just bigger, better, faster. It's not anything significantly revolutionary.
Except NFC.
NFC, and actually, I think, you know, on the 6 Plus, you have the optical image stabilization and a few other things that I think do make it a bigger deal than it normally would have been.
But do you think, just a quick, kind of a slight tangent here, do you think that, you know, it's important that they do improve the hardware, but it's almost now they're improving the last, like, 5%. They're only making it marginally better for the mainstream normal users. I don't know that a lot of people will see a significant difference in the actual photos that phone takes versus our current 4S or 5S.
The one thing that maybe you didn't catch was that they dramatically improved the sensor. And so, you know, they kept the aperture is the same, the lens itself is the same, and the megapixels are the same, but the sensor is supposedly dramatically improved. The pictures all made it look like low light was going to be a big deal. I think the camera is a big cornerstone of the iPhone, and frankly, I don't know, to this day, there's rarely been another camera phone that I think does as well.
Yeah.
I think this is now going to be the new benchmark by which camera phones are, or cameras on phones are judged.
Yeah. I mean, it has been for years, and it will continue to be, right?
Absolutely.
If Apple is not leading the way in camera tech on phones, they've got a problem.
Yeah, no question.
It is now the most, you know, widely used camera on the in the world.
In the world.
But wait, so were we going to talk about the watch?
Yeah, let's get back to watch. All right, quick tangent. We'll get back to watch.
Okay, so the watch.
The watch.
It's square. It's not circular.
Yes.
It looks pretty chunky, but nobody knows how thick. They didn't release any specs, so we don't know what the screen resolution is.
Yeah, there's a bit of smoke and mirrors around it right now. Mm-hmm. Although, the way that everything looked, and they had a live one, they had a live demo, I was sitting there absolutely captivated the whole time. Mm-hmm. Because the level of attention to detail that went into every single part of the watch was unbelievable.
That video was very dramatic. Not in a bad way. It was just, it was very dramatic. It started off
the video was dramatic.
But it was hilarious.
It was especially dramatic.
It's the world. Yeah. And now it's a watch.
My favorite,
the world is in your watch.
My favorite part was when they were showing how all of the watch bands would be inserted into the, like, attached to the watch and then, like, clasped.
Yeah.
And every band has a slightly different way of working.
Yeah.
And I commented to one of my coworkers as we were watching this, I was like, I'm pretty sure that the person that did the CG for this once had a career in directing porn, because
the shots
reminded me of that.
Yeah, there was, like, a very flesh-like quality to the the interaction of materials.
So there you
have it. It's a little creepy, actually.
Apple's hiring porn filmers now.
You know, a lot of innovation starts in porn, so...
There's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not going to comment on any of that. But what I will say is that we got precious little information about the watch, what we can expect from battery life. The battery is contained within the body of the watch, so because the watch bands swap out, so mm-hmm. there's no kind of external or additional battery that, you know, I don't see that as being an accessories path unless mm-hmm. they tell us otherwise.
And no external plug, fully enclosed. You have the little
So you can't swap out the battery. If that's what you mean.
No, I'm just saying, like, if you had an extra battery as a Mophie or something like that, a Mophie battery, being able to plug it in and the...
How do you charge it?
It charges inductively a puck on the back, and it's kind of like MagSafe. It attaches to the back from any direction, so you can't, like, misplug it. There are no contacts because it's inductive. There are no contacts, yep. So... but we don't know how long that battery is. I would imagine that they're aiming for all day. They said charge it at night.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that means they want this thing to last all day. One day at a time, that's better than what we've heard with the Moto 360, which some have said you have to charge that sometimes twice a day if you're using it heavily.
I just heard from somebody that used it yesterday, and within 3 hours, it was dead.
Yeah.
This
is going to be a problem. This is going to be these devices at this size with this level of miniaturization, battery tech is just not there right now.
And I don't want another device that's stressing me out. Already my iPhone, like, loses battery about halfway through the day, and I'm always, like, anxious to get it full, to get it charged. And I don't want to now a watch that I have to look over and I have to now charge as well.
It'll be pretty crucial.
The problem with inductive charging is that it charges so slowly. So, yep. You know, you can dump a lot of power into a phone or a tablet if you have a device that can provide that level of power.
Yeah.
Because it's just like straight electrical conductivity. It's as fast as the circuitry and the battery chemistry can allow power to be siphoned into it.
Mm-hmm.
With inductive, it's just it's like a trickle charge, basically. And that thing may take many hours to charge up. And there's really nothing we can do about that. So you're not really going to have, like, midday charges. I don't think you can really supercharge inductive charging.
Yeah.
Unless they did something really weird or crazy here.
Yeah.
Which they didn't talk about.
Do you see any particularly useful use cases coming out of this with either the software or the hardware combined?
I think that, for me, this is something that I've wanted for probably 2 or 3 years. The moment that I started to hear that people were going to start developing watches, I always knew that whenever Apple came out with theirs, that it would be the benchmark by which all the rest of them are set from here on out.
Yeah.
And I really think that's going to be the case after seeing how this thing works and just how thoughtfully everything is put together. To me, the killer use case is not pulling my phone out of my pocket. Mm-hmm. That's it. Like, that's the thing that I wanted for the most, frankly. Like, the idea that my phone is in my pocket, it buzzes. Mm-hmm. And who knows if it's a notification I don't care about or a message, right? Or an urgent message. The idea that I could just look at it, glance, and respond is really interesting to me. But, you know, thinking about the killer use cases, it's everything from... They had this amazing demo, actually, where apparently there's this thing, they call it Taptic. Is that what they called it? The engine? Yeah.
So there's it's not really an engine per se. It's a linear actuator, which is like, you know, it's like a small motor that can move from side to side, basically. So it's not the same as what you get in a phone, which just vibrates. This will actually give a small sense of directionality. And it uses that to as an additional user feedback mechanism.
So you had this demo where they had walking directions. So you have a map and you see the guy that'll walking. And it would buzz, but it would buzz in the appropriate direction for where you should turn. So you can imagine, say, like you're cycling, and you don't want a phone sitting on your handlebars, and you don't want to have to be looking at a map at all times. You can instead just have your hands on the handlebar, and it's going to either tell you to go right or left all through the watch itself.
Yeah, cycling is actually a really fantastic application for the device.
And it's tracking all of the things that it needs to be tracking about the fitness at the same time. Mm-hmm. So it's tracking your heart rate, it's tracking your elevation, they said distance.
If you have the phone on you.
Elevation if the phone is on you. Okay.
Elevation and location if the phone is on you. It doesn't have its own GPS.
But it can't operate without the phone.
They said it does require the phone, so I think in order to, you know, kind of use it, I mean, it's not going to, like, turn off and completely become inactive if you walk away from your phone, I'm sure. But you're not going to get location, you're not going to get those kinds of details if, you know, you're out in the world and you don't have your phone on you.
I think one of the most interesting things that I saw out of it, which was something fairly unexpected, was they have specific, like, watch-to-watch interactivity if you have two people that have one. And it was everything from little squiggles, so you could draw and it would be sent. Yeah. And then the one that really kind of hit me and made me think about what it might entail is it can deliver your heartbeat. Like, the idea that you could send your heartbeat to someone. But you imagine, like, for people... I remember there's an app, I think, was it Couple or something like that?
Yeah, there were a bunch of those.
There was apps for people that are couples and that may be separated by distance or whatever. And that it occurred to me, the heart thing. Like, it sounds so silly and so cheeky, but it could be really interesting.
There was a product, I think it may have been on Kickstarter, that was designed as something that you would, I can't remember if it was in your pocket or if it was a wristband, but the entire intention was to poke people effectively, but physically. So it'd vibrate when the other person pressed the button effectively. Yeah. So if you're
that's what this will do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can tap someone.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I would select Ryan.
Yeah.
And then I can tap you. I can just do a tap, or I can do, like, you know, SOS or whatever. I can just tap. I can send you a series of taps.
I'm already seeing the yo use cases right now.
honestly, a lot of what you just described, though, Matt, to me felt really gimmicky.
That's
like,
fair.
It to you is like, okay, well, let's let our imaginations run wild. But those are, as I was watching that, I was thinking of, like, kind of classic examples of things we can do, but do we need to do them? And I think this is going to be a big problem with this device, is why are we buying it?
Yeah.
If we are buying it, why are we really buying it, right? And they're showing so many different things and so many, you know, fun, whimsical, and, you know, utilitarian and health and all these different things. And I think they're trying to prove out that the wrist is a viable computing platform. And I don't think that it's not a viable computing platform, but there's also something to be said for having an Apple-like focus on use case. Mm-hmm. And they're just, it's like scattershot right now, right? It's a shotgun blast.
The use case piece is the interesting part, and I think that they're really going to try and hone in on whatever it is that's going to work really best for them. I think sports is going to be a big deal. But, you know, there was a more extreme version of your view that you just said that I saw on Twitter just left and right, which was, I don't know why I need one of these things. This seems useless, whatever this is. And it really struck me as...
Which people say about the iPad.
And this is where I parlay this into this thing, which is, I saw all these tweets and was super frustrated because people exactly said that as the iPad. Mm-hmm. So I sent this tweet. Hey, you remember that time where everyone called the iPad a big iPhone and said nobody would buy it and it was useless? And within literally 3 minutes, 50 retweets. And as of right now, 425 retweets, 750 favorites. And it's the most engaged tweet I've ever seen of mine. And yeah. I think that that kind of just proved to me that, well, one, maybe nobody knows what I was actually talking about or referencing. But the idea that that Apple has this really interesting way of introducing products that you really didn't think you needed. And even when they first start coming out, there's still the people that are like, you know, this is stupid. But after a while, it changes the game. I'm not making any predictions about this device, but look at the iPhone and its touchscreen. Mm-hmm. At the time, nobody wanted...
Well, here's the bottom line, you know, and this is a thing that we all, you know, from the smallest startup to all the way up to Apple have to remember, is that past performance does not guarantee future results.
Totally right? True.
And just because the iPad was poo-pooed by some early on, not by me, but by some, and wound up being a huge success and a really important business for Apple and, you know, perhaps the primary driver of the post-PC era, does not necessarily mean that this product is going to be a success.
Completely agree.
I mean, what Apple has done, though, is one, they have a lot of people using their products and they have a platform. And so what they can do where others can is they can put something out there like this watch and see what people build. So the use cases that they describe, some of them may actually be useful, some of them may not. But what's going to happen is developers and product people are going to build stuff on it, and then they're going to find the use cases. So, cool. I mean, that's really the value in Apple, really. I mean,
but there are two major problems with this right now. One, it does require an iPhone, right? Yeah. And this reminds me of the iPod, right? iPod was limited in functionality for most people until they made it a device that could be used with Windows PCs. And that truly unlocked the potential of the iPod's audience, right? Mm-hmm. And right now, I mean, I get it, right? The stuff that they're doing with this watch really does necessitate an iPhone. But, and it's also really hard to imagine them doing all this stuff for Android. But, I mean, I think this is going to be a sideshow until they can, you know, unlock the value for everyone. Yeah. You know, this is effectively an iPhone accessory. They, you know, they're calling it a platform and all this stuff, but if you can't use it with anything except an iPhone and you don't have an iPhone, maybe you don't want an iPhone, maybe you don't even want a smartphone at all, and there are tons of people out there who actually still don't want smartphones but who might want this device, it's not going to do you any good. Mm-hmm.
It'd be interesting if it could be its own individual device, and I think maybe it might get there, but even Android Wear right now necessitates an Android phone. You know, I think these things will become untethered eventually, but I think for a while we'll see that that's not the case. But your point about developers is totally true, and I think it's going to immediately inspire a lot of interesting use cases, plenty of crappy ones. But, you know, with our company, Circa, the idea that we build news for mobile environments, when we got the inkling that these things were going to launch, both Android Wear and this, we were just like, this is it. This is perfect. And the immediate thing that I saw when they showed off what notifications look like on this thing was, I would love the day where a notification for breaking news comes in, my wrist buzzes, I look at it, and we've got this follow feature where you can keep up with news as it progresses in one story. So this thing buzzes, I look at it, I hit follow, and then throughout the day as the news progresses, I'm getting more and more notifications and staying continually informed. That's our ideal use case, and here it is packaged in this beautiful form. And so there's no question that we'll be really gunning to be on launch day with this thing. It's exciting.
We've actually been working on some stuff in anticipation also of a watch. Not just this watch, but I mean, we've been thinking a lot about what this watch might be, and I mean, we want to be there too.
It's pretty cool.
That said, for me personally, I don't know if I would say I'm a true believer. It sounds like you're kind of a true believer.
1,000%.
Yeah. I mean, I don't wear stuff. I don't wear things on my body. And I don't think that this is going to be the thing that gets me to start.
I've been wanting this for as long as I thought it was possible. So count me a winner or count me a buyer already.
It's $350. Now you know what the deal is with the iWatch. Generally, it's not the iWatch, the Apple Watch, whatever. I'm going to call it the iWatch because it's a lot easier than calling it the watch. The watch. So knowing what you know, which is really, I mean, still not enough. there's an SDK, right? There are some limited set of APIs. It does work with Apple Pay. So you can, you know, badge in with your wrist to pay for something. Yeah.
It's not
all the fitness stuff, blah, blah, blah. Are you a true believer?
Am I a believer? Or you know, $350 is a lot for a watch like this. I probably won't buy it. I'm definitely not going to buy it on launch day. I'm going to see what people say. And I would like one more just to explore it and see what happens and get to know it. But yeah, I haven't seen the use cases that would really drive me to use it yet. What I do find fascinating, though, is, you know, over time, like, technology is becoming easier and easier to use and more accessible. Like, just take desktop, where you go to your office or your home to interact online. Then you take your laptop, which is semi-mobile. Then you have your mobile phone, and now you have a watch, this thing that's on your wrist. It's only like a wrist flip away. And we're already getting so much like content creation. Like, I don't know what the numbers are, but it's tremendous right now today. And you can imagine something like this amplifying that 2, 3, 4x. I mean, I'm looking at a screenshot right now of the interactive notifications where you're interacting with someone and you can tap a button to, you know, like, basically say something. And these are like preset options. It could be yes, no, it could be follow on Circa.
Did you see this this bit of the demo though?
No, I didn't.
So this was cool because it was a demo of a a message arriving that asked a question. Which song are you going to or like it was basically like, what are you going to sing for karaoke? I think it was what they were assuming. And then the questions were, are you going to sing Love Shack or Wild Thing?
Yeah.
And what was interesting was then when they hit respond, the options pulled up. And here on the screen, you're seeing this on the screen here, and it says Love Shack, Wild Thing, or Not Sure.
Yeah.
And so it's doing this predictive thing of what might the responses look like for this. I think it's pretty interesting.
It's cool. You know, that's doable when you're using proper grammar, right?
Totally.
Like a thing and then the word or commas and then a question mark at the end. Absolutely nobody types that way.
No.
So this will be really hilarious.
I type that way, but...
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm sure.
Your English teacher would be so proud.
But I mean, like, you know, people who aren't running news organizations
It's not going to work most of the time. Yeah. But it's
cool applications idea. Can surface these questions.
And it's got Siri. You can do the voice recognition and respond that way, too, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, I'm imagining here's just a random use case.
I'm a fanboy. Calm down, man. Calm down, nerd.
No comment.
You're in San Francisco. It's okay. You're accepted here. But I'm imagining like there's so many different use cases of just interactive notifications like this. You know, let's say you're at a concert, like going with the music example. You're at a concert and you can now choose what the song is, and the crowd can choose what the song is very easily with a tap of the button, for example. I mean, that's just one thing that's coming to mind. What other ideas come to mind as possible applications or use cases of other apps?
Well, most of the ideas that have come to mind for me with this are things I might try to develop. So I'm probably not going to talk about them on the air right now. Honestly, I mean, I got to tell you, it's not a flood for me, right? Like it's a trickle. There are a few things I think that could be made better with the wrist. There are a few things that I think if we can do it primarily on the wrist could be interesting. But, you know, I don't think this does not unlock an entire world of possibility to me the way that, you know, the iOS SDK did, right? That was like, oh shit, right? This is an inflection point in mobile development. This is, again, I think this is really interesting, really important, and will unlock some really cool new stuff. But I don't know. I mean, they really, like, they went all out with this demo.
Unreal.
Like, they did so much stuff packaged in, like, too much stuff. And,
I missed this. Does it have a camera?
We're going to need some time.
It does not have a camera.
It does not have a camera.
It doesn't have a camera, but what it does do is it can act as a shutter for your camera on your phone. So it'll talk to the phone, and you could do a remote shutter, and you have a screen, and it actually does the remote viewing of the screen. So you could set up your phone on a tripod.
I didn't see that. Where was that?
They demoed it. It was actually on the website. So on the Apple.com website, you can see that that's a feature. And I caught the little icon. So the user interface is just mind-blowingly gorgeous. And the little icon showed a camera, but it had a little arrow pointing to the shutter. And so it was kind of, I guessed it. And then on the app later, or Apple.com, it showed it. User interface is really intriguing, though. And it departs massively from the iOS kind of standard look. But it was intriguing to me that they used it's called a crown, but the little dial thing that you find on the edge of watches to you know, turn to wind it and stuff.
Yeah.
And they use that as an interface. And I think that's really interesting because they're right. On a small screen, scrolling and stuff like that might not be ideal.
And it's tactile. You can feel it. So if you're biking or if you're not looking away, you know,
I think it's really nice.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. It feels a little throwbacky to me. Right. This is like when, you know, they launched the original iPhone and like, there's no keyboard, right? And then here's a watch, and it's got like one of the oldest, old school features of a watch, which is a crown. And in addition to the crown, it has a physical button right underneath it, which I guess is apparently just for bringing up a friend sub menu. This to me felt like it was a little like, I really hate going into the would Jobs have done this, would Jobs have done that. I think that's kind of like a bullshit and ridiculous hypothetical scenario. But this to me feels like something that could be simpler. Could be simpler, maybe should be simpler. I don't know yet because I haven't played with it.
When is it shipping?
Early 2015.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's all we know.
Christmas.
Not Christmas.
You're not going to get one for me for Christmas.
I think there are a lot of health-related claims made with this device, and there's probably going to be a lot of oversight.
Take a long time to pass through various regulation and things like that. You know, but then again, as far as the delay is concerned, even some people were like, God, it's not launching till that.
Yeah.
Well, the original iPhone was announced in January of 2007, and it didn't launch until late June of 2007. So, you know, it may very well be a similar time difference.
Yeah.
I've heard that argument before. I don't know that that's... I don't know that that's, like, really... That was in a different era. Right, that happened for a variety of different reasons. Apple didn't know how to put things through the FCC without breaking confidentiality, or without being able to keep them confidential. You know, they weren't even close to being done with the product. They were not announcing things at that time on the schedule that they do now with the independent events that they do now. I mean, they did it at Macworld, which was their big platform for new product launches. It was a different era. I think it is certainly possible for Apple to have announced this closer to launch. I don't think that would have affected developer interest. And, I mean, look, it's September right now. This is their new hot shit product that they want to get out into the world. Do you think that they're stoked in any way about missing the holidays? That, I mean, this is like, inside Apple,
they
cannot be happy about this timeline. And I don't think that they wanted it to be this way. I think there are some, you know, number of gating factors that prevented it from launching.
And it's been rumored for a long time, a couple years.
Long time. Patents have been there, all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. What do you think about Apple Pay?
Well, we should probably explain what Apple Pay is.
Yeah.
Actually, I mean, I don't know. Should we? Do we just assume that everyone listening to Product Hunter
knows what Apple Pay is? We should probably explain. You guys probably know it better than I do. You know, it's...
So you know Google Wallet is?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like this.
Google Wallet. There you go. Yeah. I mean, it's...
the biggest thing, though, the biggest change, the biggest difference between Google, like, what everything was in Android with NFC, Google Pay, it was Google Wallet. All of that is that there's a lot of concern about security these days and credit cards and credit card numbers leaking and an unbelievable amount of scrutiny that is going into this. I think we just saw another breach at Home Depot. There's just... These are going to continue to happen as we continue to use these archaic methods of mag stripes and you know, plain text numbers and stuff like that. So I think the piece that they didn't blow over it, but maybe they didn't like call out the importance of this as much as I thought they could have, is the what did they call it? The secure chip. That's what they call it.
It's
the
secure enclave.
So there is basically
it's a part of ARM. Was it ARM V8 architecture? Specifies a secure enclave, which is like an encrypted, totally isolated part of the chip. They introduced that with the, what was it, the A7? I can't remember, or the A6. That's when they introduced Touch ID. So I guess... So Touch ID came along with that chip, which used that ARM architecture that included the secure enclave. They used the secure enclave for Touch ID. Now they're using the secure enclave, which they may have called something else in this presentation. I remember them not calling it the secure enclave.
Secure chip.
Yeah, so I think they're using that also for, you know, the cryptogram stuff that they're doing for transactions.
But it means that when a transaction happens, the numbers that are exchanged are a one-use thing. There's can never be
used
again.
And it's all cryptographically signed. So they're private keys on both ends. They actually released a very short white paper detailing how the transaction flow works and, you know, how to take advantage of their cryptogram stuff. It's really actually pretty interesting. I mean, this I think probably sets them apart from Google Wallet. Then again, I can't say that for sure. I haven't really dug into Google Wallet before at that level. Yeah. I think they've solved some pretty difficult problems with this. I think the most important thing they solved for was the way that you kind of, you know, quote unquote, upload your credit cards into the system, which is you take a photo of your card, they verify that against your identity, they check to make sure that card belongs to you, and then they digitize that card, they create, you know, whatever cryptographic signatures they need for that card, and then that card is now in your phone. And you know, you don't have to carry that card around anymore if you can shop at places that accept NFC.
What I find fascinating is they don't know what you're purchasing, where you're purchasing it from, if I'm not mistaken, and how much you've spent.
Yeah. Right.
And so they've obviously erred on the side of privacy at the cost of losing a lot of data that they could use for whatever reasons, for targeting, for better understanding their users.
But they're not Google.
That's true.
That would be a
move. That's true. And that's a really, really good distinction of how Google and Apple are different. You know, Apple could also do the same thing in the apps you download, and it's surprising they don't use more of the information that they could get from the device for their app store, for example.
But instead, I think, you know, they start to do really interesting things. I think the part that I was most intrigued by with all of this is the accessibility that developers will have with it. That they demoed like Target and Uber, for example, where it could have access to this framework to Apple Pay, and as a user, I can trust Apple to, you know, store my credit cards well and things like that, and therefore gain more trust in the purchases that I might make using some of these apps. Like, for instance, Uber, I might as a first user jump in and take a ride and pay for it with Apple Pay, and I think that's intriguing. What they didn't explain was the process by which a developer becomes approved for using this. So I'd be curious what that's actually going to look like. Yeah. I'd imagine it's one more step of approval beyond what a traditional app development and submission process looks like, because most likely they're going to be only working with reputable brands, because they become the people that get blamed if something goes wrong.
Well, so there's an intermediary party here, which is credit card processing. And so, you know, one of their initial partners on Apple Pay within apps. So there's Apple Pay. I'm going to take my phone up to, you know, the checkout stand, and I'm going to badge my phone into an NFC reader, and I paid, right? That's one form of Apple Pay. That's like Apple Pay in the real world, physical. And then there's the other form of Apple Pay, which is all happening in software. And that is, I'm going to buy something online. I'm going to pay for Uber. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And that's all in the device. There's no NFC in that. And that's a completely different system. And that requires processors. So they partnered with Stripe, I saw.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so, yeah, Stripe is going to be providing kind of the back-end credit card processing for Apple Pay for some of these things. But it's not just Stripe. So it's really like, okay, OpenTable or Uber uses Stripe as a card processor. They plug, you know, Stripe's integration into the Apple Pay API, into the phone, and then, you know, the pay, or they call it the pay sheet, comes up. You see, you know, which card I'm using, my address, my personal information that I'm comfortable that's associated with that. I'm comfortable with the, you know, the level of information that is present. You know, I badge in Touch ID and everything gets paid for.
It is pretty slick. The thing is, if you run out of battery, then you're screwed. So hopefully the battery life on the phone is better. It sounds like they're
marginally
better / the same.
Well, marginally slash better on the 6, but the 6 Plus does get... So for instance, like what they said was like LTE data, or maybe it was like they called it 3G data. There was like 10 hours on the 5S and then 10 hours on the 6, but the 6 Plus got an additional 2, which
it's
is actually
pixels.
Well,
so many pixels,
but yet the battery, because of the sheer size of the device, they can just simply have a bigger battery, which would allow them to have more juice to store it up to be able to, I don't know, power the crazy large display as well as sneak out a few more hours.
So most people are not not satisfied with the battery life on an iPhone right now.
I'm not.
Generally speaking. Same. I don't think you're going to hear too many people who are like, I love how long my iPhone lasts.
Well, especially people like us who are downloading a lot of apps. A lot of them are using background processes, tracking you, that kind of thing.
So one of the things that Apple has kind of traditionally done that really seems to work well for them is they make their devices as thin as possible, ridiculously thin, and they seem to sell extremely well. Every time they make a device very thin, even at the cost of storage or processing power or whatever, right? Be it the MacBook Air, be it the iPod Shuffle, iPod Mini, when that went super thin, the Nano.
Quick tangent. I remember having an 80 gig iPod back in the day. That thing was like a
deck of cards.
Yeah,
it was huge, maybe even bigger.
Every time they miniaturize, consumers respond, yeah. Right? And that's a hard thing for them, I think, to just throw away. The question is, after that incredibly long preamble, if there was a thicker iPhone, call it another 2 millimeters thicker, right, that's significant, like you could feel the difference, but that had a larger battery, would you prefer that they made that?
Yes.
So it's like, you don't think that, for you personally, there's like, you're comfortable with a significantly thicker iPhone if it means significantly better battery life.
Well, look, I already have a significantly thicker iPhone most of the time when I slap the Mophie on.
Right.
You know, but sure. If it can still be internalized, then fantastic. And actually, that's one of the driving reasons why my interest is mostly in the iPhone, 6 Plus, because at a bare minimum, I'm going to get the same battery life out of the iPhone 6, and therefore I know that I'll probably need that Mophie, which means that it's going to be basically as big, length and width-wise as a Plus. And I just don't know that I have a ton of interest in that. I think you're right about that. Apple just keeps driving towards this thinness. And I think what's at this point, though, we might have reached diminishing returns. We're at 7 millimeters now. That is impossibly thin.
Well, the crazy thing about this is we are now actually at the point where the camera sensors and the camera elements are so thick
that they have to be outside. Yeah,
that they are now physically mounted partially outside the body. It can't fit inside the body anymore. So the back is completely flat except for the camera, which now sticks out. And that's just going to get worse. Right, so the iPod Touch did this a couple generations ago or a couple years ago. And this is just going to continue to be the case unless they bulk it up a little bit. The problem with optics is, that's not a chip miniaturization problem, right? That's like light and physics, and you can't get great optics ridiculously thin. It's not possible yet.
This is crazy, though, but somebody has developed, and I can't recall the name, and so you're probably just going to look it up, but somebody developed a full optic system based on sheets of water.
So yeah, yeah. This goes back like 10 plus years. Oil and water, you can contract a lens kind of like how a human eye works. I've seen these oil water based lenses before, and I'm sure they'll continue to improve, but I don't know if they're ever going to be as good as like a properly crafted, multi-element glass lens.
We shall see. It'll be some time, no matter what.
But I'm just looking at these pictures and I'm like, I want this now. I mean, it's to gorgeous. Your point about the thinness, it's when people are complaining about battery life, they're probably not thinking that nearly as much when they're holding that in their hand at the Apple store. I mean, that's what's really going to sell, immediate gratification.
The amount of people that own Mophies and simply just don't come. I mean, look, I complain about my iPhone's battery life all the time.
Yeah.
But you know what? I still slap the Mophie on. I still, charge it multiple times a day. And I'm a happy customer.
Yeah.
And I think seeing the size of these devices, seeing just how beautiful these things might be, I will still pick this, even though I know that it's maybe not going to reach my end of day with this thing. I mean, man, years ago, my very first smartphone was a Nokia 3600. It was this bizarre candy bar that had a rotary style dial pad, which I loved so much, and is still to this day probably one of my favorite smartphones. Thing was thick as hell and all that, but you know what, it was a smartphone, and I'll be damned if it didn't last 2-3 days. Blackberries would last forever, all that kind of stuff, and that's fine, and if battery life is your goal, that's fine, but these things are just super computers that are beautiful and fun to work with, and that's just what they are. And if they've got it down to 7 millimeters now, which at this point, it's got to be half the size of the original one.
We could find that out. I'll go look it up.
We should definitely look that up. What I did look up earlier is that the iPhone 6, the 4.7 inch screen one, is now lighter than the original iPhone.
Really?
In weight. Yeah, which was 3.5 inch display and aluminum. And these, the design of these really kind of throw me back to that design, because you have this nice rounded edge as opposed to the, say, like the chamfered edges of the current one and things like that.
Which everyone complained about at the time when it came out, and then everyone adopted it.
And of course, now they're going to be like, why do we want this anymore? We definitely want rounded.
So original iPhone is 11.7 millimeters thick.
So we're not quite double, or we're not quite half, but we're
getting
close.
Getting there.
We're very close.
It's also, I mean, it's bigger now, though. Significantly larger, right? The footprint is
no
larger.
Question.
Yeah.
It's an amazing...
So you're taking that volume and you're spreading it out further as well.
Yeah. It's an amazing progression. You know, we're talking about 7 years here of how far we've come in this device. And I think there's a lot more... I think there's still a lot more to do, but I'm happy with it. I'm excited about it. So now the poll, which one are we getting? I know which one I'm getting.
I'm going... The what is it? 5.5? Is that right? 5.5 is a little big. You know, it's going to... This phone right now, I have...
That's a very polite... A little big?
A little big,
it's,
yes.
It's huge.
Okay, it's massive.
It is massive.
It's not going to feel
It doesn't sound it. Big. Dude, those phones are huge. Have you ever used a Note?
I've seen a Note. Like,
They are ridiculous.
I had an old coworker of mine, he had a Note, and he couldn't put it in his pocket, so he put it in his like front pocket in his shirt.
Yeah.
And it always stuck out, like in Her, in the movie Her, where he's got the phone sticking out. And,
Yeah, he was always filming. It was weird.
So you're an iPhone 6.
No, actually, I'm going to get an iPhone 6.
The 4.7.
Yep, the 4.7. Yeah. I think that's the right size.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going big.
You're going big.
I think I'm going to nickname it the Beast already.
Get the Beast and the watch.
But here's, yes.
And the pay.
So
see,
here's
this is fanboy logic right here.
No.
I'm going to get the 128 gig version. It's going to be amazing.
I have been a...
You'll put a Mophie case on it.
I have been a big phone hater for a long time. And the only things that are like starting to push me over the edge, number one, the iPhone 6 Plus has optical image stabilization. The iPhone 6 does not.
It does not.
It does not.
And yet, the iPhone still takes pretty damn good photos.
It does, but like I'm, I don't know. I'm really excited about photography with this thing, and I don't have the most like steady hands, and you know, night photography and all these things that I would really aspire to, I'm unable to do the way that it stands now. So I'm really excited about the optical image stabilization.
And it's only $100 more, right?
Yeah, it's only $100 more. Yeah. But it's also like you're carrying a beast.
That's true.
The idea that I've got even another few hours of battery life is pretty dramatic. But there's a couple things that they were able to, at least in a basic way, solve that got me over the hump, which is number one, touching the corners that's a big problem on large format devices. I don't have the biggest hands, and so, you know, as I think about it, being able to touch the top left corner where the back button is for everything is going to be crappy. And so they solved it by, you kind of like double tap on the home screen, not like a double click, but a double tap. And it's super janky, but it just brings the interface down, right? So you can tap what would be the top bar, except it's like half the screen is black now, and half the screen is just the top of the app.
But only momentarily. This is not meant for continued use.
No,
this is just like, oh, I need to quickly interact with something up there. Yeah. This is going to be easier than, you know, pulling out a second hand. So it is attempting to enable one-handed usage.
But what's interesting to me, though, and I'm curious what's going to happen to the product lines, is that this will probably replace an iPad for me. I love traveling with my iPad. In fact, like what my preference in a lot of times would be is traveling with my phone and my iPad and not my computer. Oddly enough, Yosemite has started to change that because they've started to close the loop between interactivity between my phone and computer. The idea that handoff, the thing where they can communicate between each other now.
It's continuity, right?
Continuity. Handoff is the name of the feature. Continuity is the name of like the product line or the I don't know, whatever you call that.
Handoff is like what you're implementing on a developer level, right?
Yes.
And continuity is the end user facing feature.
And so the idea that I can click on the Wi-Fi menu bar item and right there is my phone. Is kind of a big deal. I don't have to pull out my phone, turn on hotspot, anything like that. They all talk to each other. So I've started to use my computer a bit more. But traveling, you know, when I'm on a plane, I want to watch a movie and things like that. So the iPad was always a great thing, but this is going to be a big enough screen.
Yep.
And I think it's interesting. Look, I'm not convinced that it's going to be for me completely. I bought an iPad mini, and then the next rev, when the iPad Air came out, I got rid of the mini and got the Air, because I felt like I went from the iPad, whatever, 3 or the new iPad, to the mini, back to the Air. And look, I might get this, and after a while, might be sick of it. And
you're going to love it. I can tell.
We'll see.
You're going to love it.
But I'm really interested in it. It is interesting that Apple, you know, for so long hated on the big phones. And I really believe at this point it was a market force thing. The only place where sales of smartphones were growing was in large format phones.
Yeah.
Everything else was flat.
I've been waiting for
it. But there's also a big problem here. So, okay, large format phones are huge in countries where that is your only device, more or less, right? You don't have a computer, you don't have a tablet, you just have a phone. And so, you know, that's the rise of the phablet is as a result of that phenomenon. This phone, I think, will start to address that, except for the fact that, well, two things. One, it's really expensive. And two, they're going to get a lot of downward pressure at the rest of the market to, you know, create cheaper large phones, right? Mm-hmm. Android phones can be, that's a race to the bottom. And largeness is actually really good in a phone. Largeness can equal cheapness. In terms of total cost, right? Because you don't have to miniaturize as hard. You can use bigger, more readily available components that are not as in demand for the smaller, more compact devices. So largeness means that, you know, Apple is kind of in a weird space with this thing where they're charging more for this device, whereas, you know, large Android devices might actually start to charge less.
Yeah, interesting. Cool, let's wrap it up. Do you guys have anything to plug? I know, Ryan, you have something you want to say?
Yeah. So I've been tech podcasting for a really long time, like 10 years almost. And my last show with my last company, we kind of took off the air in 2011. That was with me and my co-founder, Peter Rojas. We're going to try bringing back a new show, consumer products-based show. We're calling it MVP.
Nice.
We're going to try to get our first episode out this week. We'll see what people say, see what people think.
Nice.
Maybe it'll be worth doing more.
Are you going to have a studio more legitimate than mine?
Your traveling studio?
My traveling studio.
The story behind today's studio upgrade is so fantastic. I hope you can like post that somewhere.
So I brought my microphone in my bag, and it's just an omnidirectional mic, costs $80. And I plug it in, and it's broken. And we're like, shit, what are we going to do? So Matt had the great idea of getting a Postmates, going to Apple, getting a new mic, and now we have a better mic and we're rocking. So hopefully the quality's decent.
It was magic. I mean, we were with literally a broken mic, and then called up Postmates. And
well, first Ryan unscrewed it to repair it, and I'm like, okay, we have the gadget guy here. He can fix it, right?
The USB connector was physically off of the PCB.
No excuses.
Dunzo, just completely gone.
Yeah. If we were at my place, I might have been able to solder that thing back in. It was gone. It's
but could
dead
you do
forever.
It faster than the Postmates, which is
minutes. It was amazing. That was incredible. And now you have an even better mic.
I know.
Which is even better.
It all worked out.
I don't know if... actually, I know that Peter uses the same mic. This is a Blue Yeti.
Yep.
I think he will be recording on that same mic. I have a Shure SM7B at my home studio that I haven't used for a long time. So, you know, I'll brush the dust off that thing and see how it goes.
Nice. Well, this should last a while, I hope.
And as far as I'm concerned, let's see here. Next week is kind of a big deal for Circa. We are going to push out our next big evolution, Circa News 3, and it's been one beast of a project. We have, the code was completely gutted and rebuilt in newer standards. The design was redone from the ground up. We've got a big new feature launching that we've been very excited about. And we've been in beta testing it for a while. The response has been incredible. And we're really excited to get it out there. It's been a long time coming, and it's a lot of work, and we still got a lot of work to do. It may not be perfect on day one, which is probably the first time.
There's always the list of features that you couldn't get in before launch, and it pains you, but you know you got to ship.
It hurts. You know? It hurts.
And the bugs, you know, that are
Apple apparently did not have this problem with the watch, though.
Of course, it's going to be perfect. Going
to
be perfect.
So I'm excited. So, you know, if you listen to this next week, you'll see a new version of Circa coming out. You'll see it on Product Hunt. I'm really excited about it, but give it a shot. I'm going to do a AMA on there.
Ask him anything.
Ask me anything.
I'm going to ask you all kinds of personal questions, completely not at all related to this product launch.
I will see what I can do, but I'm really excited about it. So if you're listening, give it a shot and get on there, get on Product Hunt and tell us what you think.
Cool. Thanks for joining. It's good.
good.
Thanks a lot.
See ya.